Hot. 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 Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio. This program gets behind the environmental, social, political, educational, spiritual, and health decisions that affect our lives and futures, yet are not always determined by us, but rather by politics, business, and other self-interest groups. Investigative in nature, we go where mainstream stops. As a leader in the healthcare and patient safety world, I now expose current and relevant harms and charms that either endanger or improve our health, our freedom, our privacy, and our sanity. Most of us simply don't have time to pay attention to decisions that are being made on our behalf, decisions made by people who may have less than altruistic motives. And often we don't speak up because we are not aware. Well, this program changes that by being the voice for informed choice. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy that we're together once again. And as usual, I have lots to share today, so let's get started, shall we? Cracking the codes. Did you know that hospitals use secret codes to pass information between the staff? These are meant to be a secret, as they don't want to alarm the patients, the families, and visitors. Perhaps you've heard some of these types of codes while shopping in places like, say, Walmart. Code C means customer assistance needed. Code C in housewares. Code C in housewares. In hospitals, for example, often code red stands for fire. Code blue for an adult medical emergency. Code white for a pediatric medical emergency. Code pink for infant abduction. Code purple for child abduction. Yellow for bomb threat. Code gray for a combative person. Silver for a person with a weapon and or a hostage situation. Code orange for a hazardous material spill release, and so on. In some hospitals, code black is for a bomb threat and code yellow is for a lockdown. In Ohio, I've heard that code gray is severe weather and code violet is a violent, combative patient. Maybe because violet and violent are similar words? Dr. Brown is a code word often used in hospitals to alert security staff to a threat to personnel. If a doctor or nurse is in danger from a violent patient or a non-staff member, they can page Dr. Brown to their location and the security staff will rush to their aid. Hopefully there's not a bunch of Dr. Browns in the hospital. Some hospitals use Dr. Strong or Dr. Heavy. And in some facilities, code brown means someone didn't make it to the bathroom in time, if you get what I mean. Now, for some odd reason, these codes are not nationally universal, meaning one code may mean one thing in Hospital A and another in Hospital B. Heaven help the doctor who may travel between hospitals and get all confused with the various color combinations. Well, what caused me to get so colorful with this topic is an article by Stephen Wilkins, a former hospital executive who writes a very interesting blog called Mind the Gap. And I thought it would be of interest to you. It's titled, Why Can't Patients Call a Code Gray on Disrespectful Hospital Staff? He says, if you have ever been in a hospital or watched a TV show about hospitals, you have no doubt heard an emergency page being called over a loudspeaker. Having a recent stay in hospital 24/7 with my sick wife for the last 3 weeks, I am amazed at the variety of codes. There are shock alerts, brain attacks, and code blues with and without doctors present. But my all-time favorite is the code gray. A code gray is called by a hospital staff on unruly or combative patients, family, or visitors. Turns out I happen to know a bit about code gray, he says. Not too long ago, an employee of the hospital where my wife was having a CT scan called a code gray on me while I was waiting for my wife. The manager of a room in the hospital I wrote about in an earlier blog, called The Scariest Place in the Hospital, found out that I wrote the piece that evidently got her in hot water and decided on getting some payback on me. It was a very embarrassing experience for everyone involved. I was embarrassed when, like out of a Frankenstein movie, the angry villagers, the hospital staff, and the local law enforcement descended upon me with pitchforks and torches. The manager of the scariest place kept demanding that I stop writing about them using my laptop, and security should call a code gray. I needed to be expelled from the hospital immediately. It was embarrassing for my very sick wife, who was wheeled out of radiology, to see the assembled masses calling me to be forcibly removed from the hospital. Most of all, it was embarrassing for the hospital, who days later apologized for the unfortunate incident and rescinded the criminal trespass warrant filed by the hospital against me. Since that experience, I found myself staying 24/7 with my wife in another hospital in the city where we live. And I was amazed at the number of code grays that were being called. One was even called on a patient a few doors down from my wife. I can't help but admit that deep inside I was secretly cheering for the patient. Now I realize that the code gray is intended to protect the hospital staff, but as I discovered, it is always used by some to threaten patients and family and visitors who hospital employees do not feel are behaving as they should. Which leads me to the point of this piece. Patients and their family members should be able to call a code against hospital employees, including physicians, displaying stupidity, rudeness, disrespect, and surliness. There were any number of times during my wife's most recent hospital stay where I wanted to tell off the nurses who felt compelled to disrespect my wife's request to close her patient door upon entry. You see, my wife is frail and preferred to keep the room warm, and hospitals, after all, are very cold places. One nurse told her, "I will close the door when I'm ready. I need to do her vitals and give her medications first." I wish I could have been able to have the hospital operator call a code insensitive employee in room 515. Or take the doctor, who would sneak into my wife's hospital room at 5:30 a.m., wake my sleeping wife and me, and ask how she's feeling. My God, where's my right to call a code bad experience in room 515? While I am on this subject, why can't hospitals provide interactive patient satisfaction surveys and code buttons via the patient TV channels or in room iPads, instead of forcing you to request a form from the staff before they can file a complaint? And another one of my favorite experiences was when my wife would ask for her lab test results, only to be told that it was against hospital policy to actually give patients a hard copy of such information. The charge nurse had to authorize such requests. And if patients wanted their lab results in writing, they needed to go to the medical records. They weren't on my wife's patient portal yet, since the doctor had not seen them yet. Time for a code, why can't I get my own damn data? You get my point. Now don't get me wrong. I know hospitals are busy places. I know nurses and doctors are busy. Heck, my wife is an RN herself and worked in that same hospital. But frankly, this hospital and others just like it around the country pay too much lip service to patient-centered care and patient experiences. Hospital administrators, of which I was once one, should be forced to stay overnight in the hospital for a week just to shadow the experiences of sick patients. Rounding just doesn't provide the same level of experience as having to endure an overnight stay in a hospital. One can't help but feel that the patients and their family are viewed by some hospitals and their employees as the enemy. Otherwise, why would the onerous practices described above and many others which I could cite be allowed to happen? Hospitals and their employees are paid to serve patients, not to ignore, disrespect, or treat them like stupid children. Hospitals are lucky that most patients are either too sick or too afraid of retribution from hospital employees to complain too much. I contend that this fear of retribution, juxtaposed by the fact that there are also a lot of really great people working in hospitals, that keep most patients from saying nasty things about their hospital stay. But let's face it, one rotten apple can, and often does, spoil the entire patient experience. But most patients are way too patient to say anything negative. Until patients feel free to express their honest opinions about hospitals, I stand by my earlier suggestion. Let patients and their families have the right to call a code for untoward staff and physician behavior. Now it's me talking. So what do you think of that idea? Should there be a special code for patients? A bell to ring, an alarm to pull? Do we as patients need a code fuchsia? Code tickle me pink? Code burnt sienna? Code raw umber? Well, that reminds me. and I would love for you to share your healthcare or hospital experience with me in writing. Just send us your story or your thoughts about your experience as a patient, a family member, or an advocate, and we will share it on our website as a way to identify trends, to vent, compliment, suggest solutions, and hopefully make positive changes. Now, there are only a few rules. First, do not name specific hospitals or people. We are not about bashing specifics. We're more about telling the stories. Instead, use Hospital A or Rehab B or Assisted Living Home C, or use Dr. Danger or Nurse Nice or something similar. Next, indicate if you'd like us to use your real name and city, or if you'd prefer to be anonymous. Either way is fine with us. We will not edit or make any changes to your submission, and all you have to do is email your story to me at pat@speakupandstayalive.com. pat@speakupandstayalive.com. And let me know your favorite color code. And stay with me, as later in the show, I have a shocking hospital code to share with you that will stop you in your tracks. You probably don't know about this, but your life may depend upon it. Don't miss it.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I'd love you to be a part of my world. It's a world filled with amazing people, interesting and engaging ideas, all related to the preservation of this great planet of ours. We interview people from all over the world about topics that I know will interest you, and we educate people in fun, informative ways and inspire them to take small steps so that together we can make a big impact. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and become a part of our world.
She is a dear friend of mine with lots to share with you. She even has a book, and you can reach her by phone at 520-230-3977. That's 520-230-3977. Or visit her website, mrsgreensworld.com.
Today, more and more people who are in quote-unquote normal families, both parents have to work. So care that's needed pushes down to the children.
Hi, I'm Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast, where we explore aging and caregiving in every generation. Listen to a brand new episode each week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, go to agewyz.com.
If you or someone you know is in the caregiver role, check out her website and purchase her book. Visit agewyz.com, and that's spelled AGEWYZ. Or give her a call, 800-590-2129. That's 800-590-2129.
This is Susan Marie from The Dougie Diva Show, the show for animal lovers. Please join my canine co-host, the Dougie Diva herself, Miss Olive, and I as we bring the experts in the pet and animal world right to you each week on Speak Up Talk Radio, or please visit us at our website at thedoggiediva.com. Have a great Diva Week, everyone.
That's right. If you want to learn more about how to keep your pets safe and happy, tune into my favorite pet show, The Doggie Diva Show, found at our very own speakuptalkradio.com, or visit doggiediva.com.
Hot, 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 hot. Bring the heat.
And now, back to the show.
Well, as promised, we are about to continue our quest to become code crackers. No codes, slow codes, and show codes. While researching hospital color codes, I came upon this little known code called the slow code, or the show code, or the Hollywood code, the light blue code, the partial code. And it refers to the practice in a hospital or other medical center to purposely respond slowly or incompletely to a patient in cardiac arrest, particularly in situations where CPR is of no medical benefit or where a medical response is medically futile, but it's faked for the comfort of the patient's family and loved ones. Slow codes and show codes are forms of symbolic resuscitation. A slow code is an act performed by the healthcare providers that resembles CPR, yet is not the full effort of resuscitation, while a show code is a short and vigorous resuscitation performed to benefit the family while minimizing harm to the patient. Sometimes a patient with severe dementia or a terminal disease, such as cancer, goes into cardiac arrest. The doctors think that resuscitation would be useless, that an aggressive intervention would provide only a temporary reprieve or perhaps more suffering. And when the patient or his or her representative has not provided a do not resuscitate order, that is when doctors and staff may call a code, but they'll respond slowly. And this refers specifically to CPR and the do not resuscitate form known as the DNR. CPR stands for cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and CPR uses mouth-to-mouth or machine breathing and chest compressions to restore the work of the heart and the lungs when someone's heart or breathing is stopped. It is an emergency rescue technique that was developed to save the life of people who are generally in good health. Advanced CPR offers additional interventions, which can include intubation, which is the insertion of a tube into the mouth or nose to help with breathing, mechanical ventilation, which is the use of a machine to move air into the lungs, medications given through a vein, drugs can help with blood pressure regulation, heart rhythm, and blood flow, and cardioversion, the use of a controlled electric shock to change heart rhythm. Now, your choice of code status is not included in your living will or any of your other advanced medical directives. It refers only to resuscitation. Unlike other advanced directives that are written and signed by you as the individual, such as the living will or the durable power of attorney for healthcare, a DNR, the Do Not Resuscitate Order, must be completed and signed by the doctor or other healthcare provider, such as a hospice nurse practitioner. Once completed, that DNR order is added to your medical record. So DNR, or a no code, does not mean do not treat. You are not saying that you don't want everything that can be done if you have a DNR order in place. You may want other life-sustaining treatments, just not CPR. The only thing that a DNR order means is that if you suffer a cardiac arrest, you are not to have CPR, and that is valid for that particular hospital admission. Now, I read this sad piece at allnurses.com that highlights what I'm saying here. It was under the heading of Great Nursing, Nursing Issues on Patient Safety, called The Slow Code by The Commuter, a senior moderator, December 5th, 2012. This person writes, "I have been a nurse for only 7 years. However, certain events and situations will remain embedded in my memory for the rest of my life. One of those events took place during my first year of nursing practice when I was employed at a long-term care facility. A code blue was announced through the overhead paging system, along with a room number. Since the facility had no designated code team, any healthcare employee who were located nearby were expected to respond. I dutifully ran to the room and entered a scene that was filled with disorder. An elderly male patient was lying on the floor adjacent to his bed in a supine position. His body was cyanotic, but still warm. His nurse states that he has been chatting with him less than 30 minutes ago. No rise and fall of his chest was noted. All pulses were absent. This clinically dead man was a full code, yet the multiple people in the room were moving with a disturbingly unhurried pace. I immediately started chest compressions. A nurse with more than 20 years of experience glanced at me with a smile and said sternly, 'Give it up. Don't waste your energy. Wait until the EMS gets here, then act as if you're doing something in front of them.' She ended her statement with a quiet giggle as the house supervisor stood over me, grinned, and nodded in agreement. I continued pounding on the man's chest and could feel his osteoporotic ribs cracking with each compression. EMS personnel and the city fire rescue squads arrived less than 10 minutes later to take over the resuscitation efforts. Approximately 30 seconds before the EMS staff entered the room, my coworkers began putting on the show and pretended to exert an all-out effort to save the patient, aka the show code or the Hollywood code. Since EMS has their own documentation, I suppose my peers wanted to appear busy to avoid potential liability later down the line." There was a bit more to that, but that's the end of what I'm going to read that this nurse wrote. So I have to ask, Do situations arise where a slow code would ever be justified? Are slow codes ethical? What if the patient was being kept alive by technology alone? As a moral decision, should he or she be allowed to die? Or what if the chronic disease the patient suffered from was beyond the resources of internal medicine and the use of technology to prolong the patient's life was a waste of time and effort? Or what if the patient specifically requested no such intervention? Shouldn't the patient decide how she or he wants to live or die? Then again, if the patient has decided that he or she wants everything done, the hospital staff should fulfill that request. Obviously, lots of moral, ethical, and legal ramifications to the slow code. If a slow code or a show code is performed, is that documented in the patient's chart? Also a note that some hospitals have policies stating that do not resuscitate patients are not to be admitted to the intensive care units. More than likely, you would not be told of this policy and the patient is sent to a floor with a lower level of care. And in order to be treated, you would need to be moved to a hospital that has no such policy. So I guess we should ask your physician about the policies at your local hospitals. And let me throw this into the mix, the chemical code. A chemical code means that a patient wants to be treated with medications only. In some hospitals, this means that no other procedures, CPR, insertion of tubes, invasive procedures, or other therapies are to be used. But the problem with this approach is that most medications cannot be given to the patient effectively without using these two procedures. So it sounds like there's just so much confusion about these slow codes, no codes, show codes, Hollywood codes. Slow codes point to two failures. One is a failure on the part of the medical staff to communicate with the family and the patient. Every doctor or nurse should ask the patient right up front about their current wishes for CPR and execute a DNR form. And for heaven's sakes, explain it well. Don't just ask, "Do you have a DNR?" Who knows what that means? Most people do not know that it only refers to CPR. Have the conversation with both the patient and the family members so no one has to play God. And the second failure is a failure on your part as the patient not to have educated yourself and your family about your wishes for end-of-life care. Slow code stresses the need for you to have a conversation based on a sound understanding of care choices and the realities that you may face at the end of life. Remember, the DNR orders, the do not resuscitate orders, are a physician's order. The physician must be involved to write it and change it. And the health personnel can only follow a DNR order if they know one exists. So therefore, it's important to notify your doctors, nurses, caregivers, and family members if you prefer to avoid CPR. Today's conversation about slow codes clearly indicates the need for more and better end-of-life conversations between ourselves, family members, and healthcare providers. Why allow someone else to make this final decision for you? Talk about the slow code or the Hollywood code today. Slow code is an element of end-of-life care in this country. The public is largely unaware of the practice. It's often imposed upon patients without their consent or knowledge. There are no laws governing it, and research have collected no data. It's like the Wild West. So I have a few suggestions. The first is to have all of your other advanced directives in place, power of attorney for healthcare decisions, your living will, and so on. And finally, unless you'd like your final breath to be likened to a Hollywood production, give this some thought today. Have conversations now and insist upon full disclosure about your diagnosis. Demand informed consent and real understanding between you and your healthcare providers at the very onset of each and every hospital admission. Talk about the do not resuscitate form and your choices. You may not want CPR or chemicals and prefer to pass naturally. That's your choice. You may want all measures taken at all cost. That is also your choice. And no one other than you should be able to make it. No codes, slow codes, and show codes? Now you know. And you heard about it here on Speak Up and Stay Alive. Well, Well, right now we are going to switch gears completely. As you know, I often interview some very interesting and exciting authors on the network speakuptalkradio.com. And I've been sharing them with you lately, giving you a little sneak peek, a little 10-minute sneak peek. And that way you can get a flavor for all of the different types of genres and authors that I have the opportunity to speak with. So right now I have an author. His name is John Darling, and I want to share a 10-minute segment with you. And then you can head over to speakuptalkradio.com. On the right-hand side of the page lists all of our most recent authors, and you will find him there, and then you can listen to the entire interview. So enjoy the next few moments with author John Darling. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details, or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today I have quite a diverse author with me. He is John Darling. Since May of 1976, John has written and published many short stories, poems, and magazine articles. His lone play, Stage Directions, has been produced in the United States, Canada, and mostly at the Soho Theatre in London. Most of his publications have been short stories and articles, though he has had some poetry in print, and many of his short fiction stories have been collected into two books. On Borrowed Time contains 11 different mysteries revolving around his anti-hero, Detective Anderson, and his colleagues. The Angel and the Bear is an eclectic collection of mixed genres, from hard-edged science fiction in Saving Abraham to romance in The Right Note to young adult literature in Jennifer Rising. You're the Who? A Guide to Classic Band Name Origins and Rock Connections is a collection of short articles which tell how rock bands and singers chose their stage names while also showing rock connections between performers. And he also co-authored a cookbook with his late grandmother, Loretta Duffy, called Grandma's Favorite Recipes. It's a cookbook made up of his late grandmother's favorite recipes, which she hand-wrote over the course of 70 years. So obviously, we have a lot to talk about. Welcome to the network, John.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. We've got a lot to talk about today. And what I did not mention was that you were, or you are, an improv comedian.
I was an improv comedian for 2 years with the Ventura Improv Company in Ventura, California, where I live.
I'm very impressed by that, just to be able to get up and wing it, especially with comedy. So today should be a breeze for you.
I hope so. I hope people enjoy our talk.
Good. I don't know that I'll be that funny, but we'll see where we go. Well, now, John, your website teases 11 tales of murder, mayhem, and mystery follow the exploits of Detective Anderson and his friends as they tackle some of the toughest cases in Miami. And I learned that tattoos inspired you to write one of these books. So share that story.
Yeah, well, I tell you, as you said, I've written a lot of different types of stories, fiction, you know, science fiction, romance, young adult. But I'd never written a mystery before until one day, I had the idea to write a story called Cat. And like a lot of stories, it started in a bar. I was visiting a friend of mine who's a bartender in town at a hot spot called Bombay Bar and Grill. And he'd been there for about 20 years, and he's a local character in himself. Well, Bombay Bar and Grill is about maybe 2 blocks from the ocean. So people would come in to the bar and various attire from the beach. Sometimes they were wearing a lot, sometimes they weren't very, very much. Well, one day I was sitting in there, and there was like literally nobody in the place. And this young lady walks in, and even though there are like 50 empty seats, she comes up and sits right next to me. And she's wearing hardly anything. just enough so she won't get arrested. And I look over at Keith, and he's trying to hide a smile. And I'm going, what's going on? So I'm trying to ignore her, but being a man and her being a very pretty woman, I had to look. And finally, she looked up at me and she goes, "Would you like to see my cat?" And I said, I think I can already see them. And then she pointed to one of her tattoos and started telling me the story about it. And that's when I realized she said tats, which is a term I'd never heard before. Mm-hmm. But she had a number of tattoos, and she went on and on and on and on. And I started drifting off. And I kept looking at Keith, and he's burying his face in a bar towel, just trying to not laugh. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to kill this guy. Finally, the young lady gets up and leaves. She doesn't order anything. She doesn't, ask me to go with her or anything like that. She just leaves. And it turns out that she's a local character that comes in and does this all the time. And, of course, Keith knows her because he works there. While she was going on with her dissertation on her ink spots, I started thinking, what if I don't like tattoos? What if I was a person who hated people who desecrated their body with these garish pictures? What would I do then? That put me on to a mystery story, and eventually wound up being called Tat. And that's the very first Detective Anderson story.
That has to be the best story ever. I love that.
Well, it was really strange. So I started writing that, and it just poured out of me for about the first 2,000 words. I couldn't write it fast enough. It was going so quickly. And then I came to the spot where probably every mystery writer comes to, is how do you get the detective to solve the crime? And I stewed on it and thought about it for probably 6 months before it finally came to me how I could put the Detective Anderson onto, the murderer. I completed the story, and I sent it off to a publisher, a magazine called Big Pulp, I think it was called. And the editor wrote back to me, he said, He goes, I love Detective Anderson. He's a great character. And if you write any more Detective Anderson stories, I want him first. Because he was going to buy it right off the bat. My very first mystery.
Wow.
But he made the mistake of saying, if you write any more. And I thought, I could write some more. And so I started writing a second story called Welcome to Jupiter. And I realized, I think I'm going to write a book of short stories about Detective Anderson. And so I kindly turned down his offer for publication. And that's how On Borrowed Time came to be.
Mm-hmm. This is quite an interesting story. And they say write about what you know. So you clearly did that.
Yeah.
And it just was very easy for you to do that. We're going to take another jump. You co-authored a cookbook with your grandmother, your late grandmother, Loretta Duffy. So that had to have been fun, huh?
That started out really as a gift to my family.
Mm-hmm.
When my grandmother moved from, she lived in Michigan with my grandfather, and he passed away, and she couldn't keep the farm up by herself. So she sold the farm and moved to Arizona, where I was living at the time. And we were going through all of her things and seeing what she needed and what she didn't need. And we were going to donate some things and sell some things because she was going from a house into a one-bedroom apartment. And one thing that we came across was this handwritten collection of recipes. And I started going through, and I go, Grandma, these are fascinating. Did you ever think about making a cookbook? And she laughed. She goes, oh, who'd ever want to read my old recipes? And I said, a lot of people. Cookbooks are really, they're very popular. And so she goes, well, you can take them and do what you want with them because I won't be cooking much now that I'm by myself. And so I took them, and I started going through them, and I started compiling them And some of them, you know, I'd go back to Grandma and go, Grandma, what's this ingredient? Or, you know, what's a pinch? You know, and she would tell me. And so I compiled it into a cookbook called Grandma's Favorite Recipes. And I made copies and I gave it to all the people in my family. Well, I would tell people about that, my friends and coworkers, and they would say, hey, can I get a copy of that book? I'd say, sure, and I'd run off a copy and put it together for them and give it to them. And then I thought, maybe I can publish this. And before Grandma passed away, it was published on a very small publishing house called The Bookshelf. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to Grandma, and she was so happy.
Oh.
She couldn't believe that people wanted her recipes. And since that publishing house went out of business, I decided to self-publish it and put it on Amazon. And it's been a great seller. And all the proceeds of the money, I used to give all the proceeds from the book, I used to give to my mom, but she's since passed away. And now I take the proceeds and I give them to a local food bank.
You are such a good man. I like the story as well. How many people would have just cast those aside, but how important is that? I know my mom just passed away last August, and I went through her little box that had all of those goodies in it, and I've been working just for myself and my family just to put those together, those old Christmas cookies and Easter cookies and all of the things from the past. You can't let those die. So how exciting also that she had the opportunity to see those in print.
Yeah, I was so happy about that, because by that time she was very ill and in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to go in and say, Grandma, look.
Oh.
And she just laughed and laughed and laughed. I still remember that laugh.
I can tell. What a joyful moment that must have been for both of you.
Really was.
I know, you're making me smile. Wow, what a pleasure to learn so much about you in this short amount of time. You are quite a person. Well, where can folks, if they're curious as they should be, go to find out more about you and to purchase your books?
Tell you, the best place to find me is at detectiveanderson.com. And from there, you can link to my Twitter page and my Facebook page, and that goes into the rest of my publications.
All right, so it's detectiveanderson.com. Well,
right.
John, what if we never met? I'd be sad. Thank you for today. Thank you for sharing all of your work with us and who you are as a person and for giving us such great advice. It's really been my pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, I do believe this is the fastest show in radio. Always goes by so quickly, and I always have so much to share with you. And anyway, I hope that you do find some time or make some time this week to head over to our websites, speakuptalkradio.com and speakupandstayalive.com. So much information on both of those sites for you. Well, until next week, I hope that you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice. The pharmaceutical industry is wreaking havoc on our health. Drugs promoted on TV and magazines. Drugs, drugs, drugs. I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Essential oils are powerful and concentrated plant essences. And just one tiny drop can have noticeable health benefits. No pills and no nasty side effects. Take charge of your health. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com.